when you think you're out of choices, up against the wall, there's always one choice, at least, which is that you can choose to drop into what's happening and relate to it. There's a choice in how you relate to it. In the yogic tradition, an image that I always found very useful was of a spinning grindstone, that the world is like a spinning grindstone, and that you can either be completely chewed up by it, or you can position yourself much as if you were making a key or sharpening scissors. You can use this spinning grindstone, which is extremely rough, to do a very fine honing job on your rough edges by actually turning to let the world just sort of shave off part of you without shaving off your head. Okay, so it's a delicate balance, and that's part of what practice means to me, is to continually sort of turn into the place that hurts, the place where the fear resides, the bandage place, as Rumi calls it. That's where the light comes through, or that's where the light enters you. In fact, my colleague, Dr. Saki Santarelli, is writing a book about the Stress Reduction Clinic called Shattered But Still Whole, that suggests that shattering is exactly what we need often in order to realize our wholeness. And that rather than turning from the woundedness, turning from the pain, turning from our fear, we need to turn into it and look, sit, feast, if you will, on that diet, even if it's an acquired taste. And to a large extent, this work is an acquired taste, because the easy path is to go unconscious. And Thich Nhat Hanh says, well, why do we have to practice mindfulness? Because actually we're practicing its opposite all day long. You know, and there's some validity to it, you know. Every time your buttons get pushed and you get impatient, or short, or you turn away, or you contract a little bit and get tense about something, you get better at it. So the next time that those kinds of conditions come up, it's more likely that you'll contract in that way. So if you hope to in some way, it's because practice makes perfect. So we're practicing anger, practicing frustration, practicing irritability, practicing not feeling whole. So we get better at it, not surprisingly. That's why perhaps we need to sort of really look at what our habits are and swear off them, not by renouncing them, but by pouring our energy into the places that we have passion for. And so it brings up, like, what is your passion? What do you actually care about enough that you would put your life on the line for it? This sitting posture doesn't mean we're casually going to spend 20 minutes breathing in and out and hope for the best. This means I'm ready to die right in this moment. I'm willing to just be here with whatever comes. There's a wonderful line from Kabir that goes, let what comes, come. It's serious business. It's a razor's edge. It's like no joke. It's not kidding around. And if we could sort of align ourselves with that energy, because what else is there to do? Anything else is kind of like on automatic pilot, drifting, so to speak, then we would actually reclaim our lives. And there's no one right way to do it. There's no one right way to do it. Just as in Wherever You Go, There You Are, I mean, there's a little chapter in there that I wrote when I was in the Grand Tetons about hiking in the Tetons, and I was with my children. You know, it wasn't rock climbing, but it was pretty tricky terrain over some rushing brooks and, you know, like wide brooks and rocky terrain and scree that sort of could easily fall away and so forth. And as I was watching my own walking, noticing what the choices were, how my body, when I would just watch and not sort of interfere, my body made its own choices about how to get across the stream, where to put my foot and so forth. And I would then watch my children behind me and be really amazed that sometimes they'd make entirely different choices, and this like impulse would come up in me to say, don't put your foot there. I put my foot here. Do you know that impulse? Like, I put my foot here. That's the best way across the stream. As if that rock had been waiting there for 2,000 years for John Kabat-Zinn to put his foot on it and then figure out the next best thing to do is to put his foot there. So maybe we should carve my initials in the rock and say, from now on, anybody who crosses this stream, this is the way. And when you put it that way, it's so patently absurd. So when the children need a hand, of course, you extend the hand and you help them across no matter where they're putting their feet. But you also watch and you'll notice their feet find their own way. Now, is it possible, is it even remotely conceivable that if our feet can do that when we're 5 or 8, under challenging conditions, with a little helping hand from time to time when it gets really hairy, is it even within the realm of possibility that that wouldn't be so for us? Is it even conceivable that that wouldn't be so for us now? Doesn't feel that way to me.